You're not alone and it never comes free. Everybody's lost on the same street.
Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. David Fitzpatrick has been on the Milwaukee music scene for quite some time as the frontman for his David Fitzpatrick Band. But a few years ago, things started slowing down for Fitzpatrick. Several of the members of the band moved or drifted away from the band, and life circumstances brought things to almost a standstill.
But Fitzpatrick never gave up the dream or the business, and after a songwriting and recording effort that lasted several years, the fruits of his work are just out, an album called Parachutes in Hurricanes. Fitzpatrick and producer Gary Tannen stopped by the Lake Effect studio recently to talk about the origin story of the new record. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
Pleasure to be here.
Was there a story you were hoping to tell with this new album?
Yeah. To me, it felt like a soundtrack, but, I really don't know what the theme is. Like
a soundtrack to what?
Concept album. Yeah, a soundtrack to what, you know? Because I had a lot of things going on at the time. I was taking care of my folks. My dad passed away through part of it, and that was a big moment for me to say, look, like he said, time's wasting. If you're going to do this, you got to concentrate on it and put everything into it. The other albums were all done in my basement, and they're great. I'm proud of them and everything, but I really wanted somebody else on this. I wanted horns. I wanted a feel. But a lot of the songs ended up being about what's been going on the past 3 years, in subtle ways,
Right. You say life gets in the way, but without that life, you don't
exactly.
have material.
That's the lesson learned. This album was, for lack of a better word, therapeutic, for that and in that matter. And it also was a lot of it was written in real time, which is really interesting because there's a lot of times I came in, I'm pulling in Gary's driveway and I'm like, he's going to kill me because I don't have this next verse. But I'd go in there and we'd start talking and then we'd start doing it and it would just start coming out. So the fun part of that album is so much of that is written at the moment of recording, not something that's predestined. This took shape in there, and it took shape as all these events are happening and this time is becoming too long.
So when you look back at this record, 10 years from now, it really is a snapshot of that point in your life.
Oh yeah. I think the biggest thing about this, I'll always remember this album to be, and there's going to be plenty more, I guarantee you that. I'm never stopping. It's closed a door and opened a new one.
Gary, as the producer of a record as it's being made in this way, do you have to balance the writing in real time with wanting to polish it as well?
Oh, absolutely. But I realized early on with Dave, in the process of selecting the songs, Dave would give me demos and I'd say, Dave, that's a snippet of a chorus. And he says, yeah, but I just say whatever words come to my, I said, Dave, that's not going to work. But the challenge was I listened to the first two songs, Your Ghost and On the Same
Tonight,
Street.
Tonight, I think, or Lost on the Same Street.
Or, the two. Yeah, Lost on the Same Street, right.
Yeah.
And All in Tonight as well. And I listened to the poetry and I said, I don't care how this happens. This guy did this. So I'm not worried so much. It was a challenge because normally I don't work writing in the studio. I have done some of that, but it's mostly been on my own material where I'm in the process and I'll change lyrics or I won't have lyrics. So I'm used to that process, but not with another artist this deeply.
It worked for Lennon and McCartney from what I gather in the early
days. Yeah, well, and we don't have that long term of a relationship, but I have been, put it this way, it was natural for me to be helping with the writing at that side of it because it allowed for Dave to express this material in a way that would have never happened any other way.
Right. Well, I agree. Yeah, that's what made it interesting, very interesting.
The cliche, capturing lightning in a bottle here.
Right.
And
it's Grace Under Pressure. For some reason, it takes that. That sounds probably maybe a bit immature about it, but it really takes Grace Under Pressure with me. There's plenty of times, and I'm not just going to put anything. If I don't feel it, I have more respect for my listeners than to throw something out that I'm not feeling. Why would I expect them to,
Well, I feel like at this point we heard some from the record going into the interview, but you brought your guitar along into the studio.
Yes,
we
definitely
would love to hear something as interpreted acoustically today.
Fantastic. Great.
Tell us what you're going to play.
Well, I'm going to play If I Could. This was a song that I wrote quite a while ago and always had it around. And didn't know if it was going to be fitting for the album, but once Gary heard it and we thought, yeah, it'll be a nice contrast to some of the other stuff. So so it's been around for a while, which is nice to see it on the album because it's new to everybody. If I could turn back time, I'd gather up your sorrow, throw it right out of your mind. You'd forget it tomorrow, you'd be so free from anything that ever made you cry. If I could, oh, if I could, I, if I could take your smile and paint it on the mirror, I'd wake up every day in style. You'd be so much nearer, I'd be so free from ever thinking life had passed me by. If I could, oh, if I could, I'd be that sail that brings you in to shore. I'd be that warmth that always gives you more. Oh, I'd be that secret place you love to hide. Ooh, if I could, oh, if I could, I. If I could, oh, if I could, I, if I could, oh, if I could, if I could, oh, if I could, if I.
If I could, David Fitzpatrick in the Lake Effect Studio. Thank you so much. What a great song.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Tell us a little bit about the guitar you played that on, because there is a story behind it.
Yeah, it's a Taylor. I had it for a very long time. I used to have these really kind of cheap acoustics, you know, which are wonderful, you know. But I started recording in my basement, kind of built my own studio. And boy, when you listen back to them, it was a nightmare, you know, to get a good sound. And I was at the store and I saw that and begged, borrowed, and stole to get it. You know, it's expensive, but it stays in tune. And I was basically, we were a rock band at the time, you know, a little heavier. I had two guitar players. So I brought that acoustic and I just played acoustic and they played the electric. And I started really beating the heck out of it and was upset about all the dings that was getting it until I realized, you know what, that's seasoning it.
Character so, marks.
Yeah, it stays in tune all the time. It's cherished, that one.
How long does it take for a guitar to feel like your guitar?
Not long. The first couple dings that you get upset about, then it's your guitar, you know. I have a Telecaster at home. Fender Telecaster was my first guitar that I ever had, and that's my prized possession. It's heavy for anybody, any guitar players out there. It's the Fender in the old days, so it's like a 1979, and it's a lead ball around your neck, you know. But everybody, and it's beat. I mean, it gets beat up, but boy, every guitar player out there who sees it just says, hey, when are you getting rid of that? That one? Never. If the house was burning, that'd be the first thing I'd grab.
Yeah. You were saying that you know, for a long time you played on cheap acoustics in you know your basement.
You get your hands on, yeah.
Yeah. when you listen back to the stuff that you recorded years ago, what has stuck with you that shows up on this album? And what have you kind of gotten past?
Well, that's a great question, because that actually happened recently. I have, I think I counted last 120 90-minute tapes full of material at home, bits and pieces, maybe not complete or anything else.
And for our younger listeners, tapes are these things that we used to record things on.
Used to have a little Walkman.
Yes, exactly.
And I always had to have a recordable Walkman, because that's how I get all my notes. You know, I kind of write sporadically like that. And it was fun to listen to it. There's certain nuances in singing and feel that I still have. But the beauty of it is to when you're kind of down or things maybe not going strong enough, you're not really seeing the results that you've accomplished. You listen to this old stuff and realize how far I've graduated as a writer, how good I've gotten at being me. My goal was always, you know, it's not technically how well you write as much as you have to be you. When you're able to interpret you to other people and do it clearly and honestly, that's when things really happen. That's when people feel it. You know, you never underestimate listeners. And I noticed that that's starting to come across much better. It's fun to have that comparison.
I would just add to that that clearly the only you know, if you have a barometer at all, the kinds of critical review we've gotten on this record has all been just tremendous.
Outstanding.
I mean, 4 and 5 star reviews, European blogs, you know, making
looked like a nice review in Belgium. I saw.
Yeah, that was excellent, and it compared him to early Bob Seger, which was interesting because I didn't hear that while we were recording.
I wonder if references like that are a surprise when you hear them.
Well, they make a lot. When someone nails it and you go, yeah, then they make a lot of sense. And Dave Lurson from the Shepherd Express made that comparison. I thought it was like, you know, it had the sensibility of Van Morrison in kind of the and maybe some of the Irish punk bands in that the gravity of the poetry, and that's what attracted me. But I can see the comparison to Bob Seger.
Well, so let me ask you both this question, and I'm kind of curious to get, you know, both musician and producer's take on this. Is there a moment that maybe might otherwise pass people by on this album that you would really want people to be aware of?
Yeah, there's a certain feel that happened. I'd love for them to be aware of getting their own interpretation of this. This is a lot about disillusionment. It's not to be meant as a negative album or a downer. It's there's disillusionment in the world. And the one thing that I learned is, like, Lost on the Same Street is very much a unity song. Look, there's disillusionment. You know, you get older and certain things don't happen the way planned and what was going on, what I was seeing in my life and everything else. But the whole theme of it is, yeah, that's happening and that's the world, but you're not alone. You're not at home alone feeling that way. And that's one thing that I don't hear a lot of people say about music as much as it shows you you're not good, bad, sad, happy, violent, mellow, love. This is all, you're not alone in these feelings. And that's what music does more than anything else for people. You know, and I really want them to get across, this is normal life. There's nothing dramatic on it as much as this is normal life. Hey, I'm feeling it. Hope you're feeling it too, and hope this shows you that you're there's other people out there.
And Gary?
I would say, and I thought you would say this too, David, and I think once I say it, you're going to say, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that, yeah.
The song Done to Me.
Yeah.
It came at the end. It was written, again, completely in the studio, and it is like the bookend to the whole project. It's like all of these storylines and comparisons and not-alones that happen throughout the record. And you know, I got to say that the wealth of musicians, local musicians that we had on here that were all excellent, Jack Spann, the fact that we recorded at Tanner Monagle Studios was upscaled everything. But ultimately, when we ended up with that last song that I went in and actually played grand piano on, there's a tenderness and a longing and a languor about that that just every time I hear it, I just go, it just leaves me with this kind of melancholy sadness, but almost gotten through it kind of thing. And I think that that is the, you know, that's the
de resistance, as they say.
It is. It's very personal, and you know, it deals with how would you put it? It is melancholy. It's kind of an end and a forgiveness for things, you know, in certain ways. And hopefully people get that out of it too, that it's, you know, it's not their fault. You know, this song is very fitting for people who have been victims of some type of narcissism, you know, and that kind of thing, I think is would be great to have them hear it and really, really feel that same way, you know.
Yeah, and I think there's real, real strength in that forgiveness aspect.
Yeah.
Well, Tree of Forgiveness by John Prine. I mean, that whole idea of getting to a point where forgiveness is not about the other people. It's about yourself being freed. And to me, that's what that song does.
Right.
You know, after all of the songs on the record, it's kind of this...
David Fitzpatrick's new album is called Parachutes in Hurricanes. It's produced by Milwaukee's Gary Tannen. We spoke with both of them recently, and you can find more about the album at WUWM.com. So long.